Oh, hello, everyone. Before we get started with today's episode, I have a special announcement. We are so close to our 350th episode, and in order to celebrate that, we're doing a live episode. That's right. We're doing a live episode recording on Monday, June 10th at 7 p.m. at the Triad Theater here in New York City. Now, if you can't make it out, don't fret. There is a live stream option for you all. We will be discussing the 2007 movie Across the Universe. So again, if you want to come out and celebrate 350 episodes with myself and a panel of friends, we will be at the Triad Theater on Monday, June 10th at 7 p.m. In-person tickets are $15 with a two-drink minimum, and the live stream has a tiered system where there's a $15 and a $20 ticket. For more information or to buy tickets, check out the link in all my socials at ButASongPod. And now, on with today's episode.
Life's but a song, so you can sing along with a special guest or two.
Or two.
You like to sing and dance, and this podcast, by chance, explores musicals for you.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to another episode of Life's But a Song, a podcast that likes to live in the land of musicals. I'm your host, John, and with me today is, I don't know how else to describe her besides saying she is the true best friend of the pod and my true best friend. It is Lauren Gismondi, everyone. Woo!
Yay! That was a little shady. I loved it.
What? You're on a lot, and you are my best friend.
I know.
And Lauren has helped out behind the scenes a lot, but we don't talk about that as much.
It's fine. Nobody needs to know. Pay no attention to the person behind the curtain. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Yeah. We're not doing that one today, Lauren. We're here today to talk about The Pajama Game from 1957, screenplay by George Abbott and Richard Bissell, who also wrote the book for the stage version, which we'll get into that a little bit more later. Music and lyrics by Richard Adler and Jerry Ross, directed by George Abbott and Stanley Donen. And according to IMDb, do I say his last name right? Is it Donen?
I believe so, yes.
Donen. Okay. And according to IMDb, an Iowa pajama factory worker falls in love with an affable superintendent who had been hired by the factory's boss to help oppose the workers' demand for a pay raise. I have never seen this before. I'm not going to lie.
Okay.
Right off the bat. Cool. I've only really heard of Steam Heat. Mm-hmm. And I believe I heard the titular song before. Other than that, new experience for me. How about you? I mean, obviously you've seen the movie before. Otherwise, why would you pick it? Right?
True. Yeah, I was exposed to the stage show before the movie. So that's where my origin story is. But the reason I picked it is over the summer, this past summer in 2023, I was staying with my grandmother for a week. I was helping care for her. And while my aunt and uncle were away on vacation, and in this week, she and I we had a phenomenal time. But one of the things that we did was every night before either of us went to bed is like we would pick a movie, and like that was like our movie for the night, and like have a baby bowl of ice cream and like just sit and eat ice cream and watch movies. I lived like a retired old lady for a week, and I loved every minute of it. This was one of the movies that we picked, and personal family history. My grandmother worked in a factory just like this, the factory that's featured in the movie, in the story.
Wow.
Back in the 1940s and 1950s in Queens.
Holy shit.
So I was picking her brain as we were watching it. So that is also why I wanted to talk about this movie.
Okay. I don't want to relive a past episode, so I'm going to rip the Band-Aid off. This movie's insane.
Yes.
Okay, good. Yes. Okay, great. Okay, great. We're on the same page. I was like, I am hoping for not another Lil Abner debacle happening where I have to defend why I, what my weird, complicated feelings towards this movie after seeing it once.
Sure. No, that's fair. That's fair. I can't argue with that. I agree. And I have to say that it still holds up. In other words, like what it is the movie's actually about, which are these workers fighting for this, it's 7.5 or 7.75 cent raise. Yes. That holds up to the crap that's happening now.
It's still going on. Yeah. And, you know, I have to say,
you know, union the whole busting and all that.
Throughout the whole movie, mm-hmm. I was like, that's nothing. 7.5 cents is nothing. I had to go to, I actually did like stuff, research, looked into this a little bit more. According to IMDb trivia, they said that according to like 1954 wages, which presumably this is set. I mean, that's when the, that's when it premiered on Broadway. And the book came out. There was a book called 7.5 cents that came out a year before that. Mm-hmm. So in 1954 pay wages, the average mill or garment worker was making $1.25 an hour. Mm-hmm. So 7.5 cents is about 6%. Yeah. So I was like, okay, after reading that fact, I was like, all right, that's good. But I feel like, you know, because management was shuffling their heels around, I was like, ask for more, more money.
I guess because it's Iowa, 7.5 cents goes a very long way in the early 1950s, don't you think?
Well, so that's about a $3 raise in their weekly paycheck. Mm-hmm. So, but like even during, God, even during the final song, 7.5 cents, mm-hmm. I was like, okay, you all are saying how in time you'll be kings and royalty and billionaires, but like not really, because your needs are gonna, you, whatever you need to do, like pay a bill, buy food, you know, maybe if you have kids, well, and if you have kids, that's a whole other issue, but like that 7.5 cents that you're getting that you're raising your paycheck with is like gonna be eaten up faster. So ask for more.
Yeah. I suppose if you were to stage it or film it now, perhaps that ending would be a bit more, could be turned very dark very quickly, depending on who's directing it.
I didn't flat this, so I'm not jumping ahead, but I really didn't like the ending. I felt like I was reading on Wikipedia for the show that there is like two more songs after 7.5 cents. And I was missing like an outro, if you will, or like,
yeah, it was abrupt.
Yeah. 'Cause 7.5 cents was like, it was a fine song. I checked their math and the math is mathing, I will say, but it didn't feel like a good ending to me. I don't know about you, how you feel about it.
Oh, I already said it. It was an abrupt ending, you know? It does feel that way because it is that way.
It is that way.
I wonder, you know, every once in a while, I don't know if we've talked about it too much on this particular podcast, but I often wonder, you know, what's left behind on the cutting room floor.
Yeah. So they cut out a bunch of songs. Mm-hmm. And apparently they did record, like they cut 6 songs, although I think they recorded like 2 or 3 of them. Yeah. And then they're like, no, we're not adding them. We're going to cut them.
It's true. Yeah. And I mean, that could be a budget thing for all we know. We could sit and speculate all day as to why these cuts were made in the first place.
But it also felt like, now, again, first time watcher for mm-hmm. everything. So I don't know how well you remember the stage version, But it also felt like the songs didn't really fit in that well.
I think some are, but some fit better than others.
Yes. Like Steam Heat, I was like, what the fuck?
Not your average protest song, but here we are.
Yeah, and then I was reading that for in the 2006 revival, they changed it so that May sings it, not Gladys, with the two male backup dancers. And I was like, that also makes sense, because they even say in the movie, you know, she's, even though she's the secretary, the boss's secretary, she's coming on down to entertain us. And I'm like, why? She did a great job. I'm not going to lie to you. Like, that act, what's her name? Carol Haney, who played Gladys, definitely did her job. And fun fact, she is one of the few people, the majority of the cast is from the Broadway show, and she won the Tony for Best Featured Actress.
There you go.
I can't remember which song it was that she sang, but I wrote down, I was like, yeah, you definitely deserve this.
That is nice. I didn't know that most of them were Broadway transfers. That's refreshing.
Oh yeah. Like there's like just a handful of them that are not from the Broadway show.
Right.
Originally they didn't want John Raitt as Sid, and they wanted, because they wanted Frank Sinatra.
Ew. Okay, right? Look, I love Frank. I love me some Uncle Frank. I really, really do. As an Italian-American, he's done so much. No. Not here. No.
Well,
no,
so that
John Raitt is like the voice of a friggin' angel. Absolutely not.
Well, they wanted Frank Sinatra, and they were going to keep Janice Paige, who originated the role of Babe.
Yeah.
So once Frank Sinatra said no, then they were like, okay, so we're going to keep John Waite, but then add Doris Day, because now she was in league with Warner with her contracts and everything.
Right.
Listen, I read all of the trivia.
I know. Well, it's fascinating. That period of time in Hollywood, I think that's part of the reason both Sierra and I like to talk about it when Sierra Ryan comes on, is that it's fascinating because it's before the time of a lot of the unions and things like that. So the things that the studios were doing, they could just do it without anybody questioning them. So it's kind of, you know, contract negotiation and all that jazz. So I feel like this movie is pertinent in that way too, because it is kind of a reflection of the way women, especially women, were treated in Hollywood at this point in time.
So them making this movie is kind of the actors looking at the screen like, you see this? You listening to us?
Are you paying attention?
Are you paying attention? I mean, I felt like it definitely did feel like there was a bigger message at play. Although I kind of wish they called it Union the Musical.
Okay, but here's the thing. If it was called Union the Musical, it would never get produced.
You're right. You're totally right. And I'm glad, though, that like they just paid homage to Richard Bissell's book, 7.5 Cents, by just from like the brief blurb I read about it, it felt like they kept everything true. There's the only major difference I noticed is the ending,
right?
Did you read it? Have you read it?
The book, no. Can't say that I have, but maybe now I will.
Do you want me to spoil the ending for you now, or do you want me to?
Sure, please. It's okay.
So, listeners, here's the spoiler jingle for you.
Spoiler.
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 Okay, so at the end of the novel, 7.5 Cents, they actually get the raise, and it's retroactive. Whereas in the movie, they say it's retroactive,
just, yeah.
Which made me want to throw things at them. However, it turns out that both Sid and Babe quit. So, and then they just start planning their honeymoon. So,
oh, well, all right.
Also,
by the way. Mm-hmm. her name is in the book is Catherine Williams, mm-hmm. and Babe is a nickname. But like every once in a while, whenever Sid and Babe were together and he was mm-hmm. talking to her saying Babe, I was like, are you saying the nickname or the or like Babe as in like
babe, you're my babe. Pet,
yeah.
You're,
yeah, pet nickname. It worked in a lot of sentences where I was like,
exactly, that's the thing. Are we today? It's like, uh-oh. what are we really saying?
Yeah, and the other thing to note about this movie is that, mm-hmm. and this is how I know it, is that Bob Fosse choreographed it.
Yes.
Which, when we did I'll Never Be Jealous Again, I was like, this doesn't feel like Fosse at all. Mm-hmm. Granted, I think this is the time when Fosse is just starting to like make the name for himself and get his style in. So like when we get mm-hmm. to Steve Heat, he's fully like, I'm out of the cage. Let me do my thing.
Yeah, I was about to say, I'm like, I think Pajama Game is one of his earliest musical endeavors.
Yes.
I feel like I almost positive it comes before Damn Yankees, if I'm remembering correctly. I might be wrong. I recognize that, and I will say I might be wrong, but they are, I'm pretty sure Pajama yes. Game is before Damn Yankees.
Yes, by a whole year.
Yes.
But then it's also before his style really like flourishing in the 60s.
Yeah, exactly. So it's kind of cool to, you know, for people who are serious like musical theater history nerds mm-hmm. to kind of see like this is where things were kind of getting started. Like you can see some of the specificity, especially in oh gosh, the one song, it's the massive ensemble of them in the sewing room.
Racing with the Clock?
That's it. That one, like you can see like the foundations for Money and the foundations for He Had It Coming. Like I see it there.
Yeah. And then Steam know? Heat in and of itself, mm-hmm. I know it from listening to the cast album of the show Fosse.
Yes.
Because that's the one where they're like, oh, that's the one that they just use. And it is mm-hmm. like, okay, when we did Kiss Me Kate, obviously we talk about the, is it 66 seconds? It's some ridiculous time that doesn't seem like a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Bob Fosse was a dancer in that, and I can't find it. But
yeah,
it
isn't
is,
he one of the suitors in Tom, Dick, or Harry?
He is. And then he got like a whole, like a minute, less than a minute maybe,
mm-hmm.
To do a little solo where we're just seeing the beginnings of his style. Mm-hmm. And so now I guess.
Huh? Is it in Too Darn Hot?
No, it's in Tom, Dick, or Harry. Oh,
okay, that's what I was trying to figure out. Okay, got it. That's, I'm like, wait.
Yeah, no, in Tom, Dick, or Harry, there's a little dance break that he partakes in.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, and it's only 66 seconds, but that 66 seconds is what is like film history. It's Fosse history.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And then now we go to this where Fosse's starting his style a little. He has a whole song to do his style, but like even peak, like there's little touches here and there.
Yeah.
But the song I'll Never Be Jealous Again, which I don't care about that character, so why is it there? I don't like Hines at all. I'm not going to lie.
Mm-hmm.
He's a weird character that has this weird jealousy, and his wife Gladys, who sings Steam Heat, is like, why are you jealous of me talking to any man? I mean, it's my job, first of all, but also, hi, you don't have ownership of me.
Yeah.
This movie
that's
is
really
also
what that's about.
This movie is also like 1950s horny.
Yes. Yes, it's a real thing. You have to, I mean, listeners might not like this, but the history of what's going on in the world influences what gets written and how things get written. So that we're coming out of the Second World War. The Korean War is going on at this point. Yeah. We're in the middle of the Red Scare.
Uh-huh.
Which is, I think, is also part of the reason a lot of the things, certain things in Hollywood got censored in these movies during this period of time. Because yeah. people were legitimately scared for their lives, for their careers, at the very least. So,
at least in the movie, I can only speak for the movie again. It feels like Sid is coming on too strong to Babe that it's bordering sexual harassment.
Yes. Which is why she initially is like, that's where I'm not at all in love. Like she's fighting those feelings.
And then she also is like, I'm a union worker first. Cause that's, I know I love you and all this, but I'm a union worker first and we want our raise and you're my supervisor. Again, I'm watching Grey's Anatomy and there's a lot of that that's going on in this movie.
Yes. Yeah. I would say the power struggle is very apparent. The powers, yeah. and in more than one ways. I'm not just talking about them with their careers, with their jobs, but also, you know, the sexual power is at play too. That's what some people will say. That's what makes it intriguing.
I was as you roll your so eyes. Hard. Well, so I was telling somebody, I was like, watching a movie from the 50s, it's always just like a game of how racist and or sexual harassment is this movie going to be. And it turns out this one is mild on the racism, but very on the sexual harassment scale. The only racism I noticed was during the company picnic, where they have a child act like a Native American. It was weird. Also, that picnic, segue. You want to talk about insanity? Let's talk about that picnic.
Let's talk about the picnic, John.
The once a year day song.
Yes. Well, everybody's going to go strip in the park. Yeah.
This is where I wrote, so sexual harassment is okay at this picnic, but only at this picnic?
Yes, exactly. It's like the Purge, except for sex.
Also, that picnic is insane. Like, just like... I guess this company, we only see a small portion of it. We only see
the one factory.
Well, it seems like we only see the one floor of the workers where they're doing the pajama tops and bottoms for whom? Who knows? I think it's for everyone. But
yeah, I'm pretty sure.
And then I feel like at one point, Sid calls on another department. So it's very interesting. But like, we're at this picnic where there's free beer, but no free utensils. And
sounds about right. That sounds fucking corporate right there.
Bring your own fork and knife.
Bring your own fucking spoon, asshole. But we have vodka.
But we have free beer. It's like, what? Shouldn't it be reversed?
Fork. Nah, you bring the fork, I'll bring the beer.
But it should be BYOB, utensils provided.
Hey, ma'am. I'm the 50s. I don't know.
But then there's that whole knife throwing thing with Vernon.
Yes.
Vernon.
You mean the scene? Again, it could have turned into a horror movie right about there. Something terrible could have happened.
It almost did. Mm-hmm. It was. At first, before they even confirmed it, I was like, is he drunk? And then they were like, ah, yes.
Well, it's drunk. Free pizza, free beer, no utensils. So yeah, everybody's probably drunk.
And it's like, there's a brief moment before that happens where a woman comes out of the woods and she's a little disheveled and she's like, don't go in the woods. I'm like, lady, what's happening in the woods? I know I what's told happening. You.
Exactly. I'm like, anybody who was any who has ever done a summer stock contract knows what's happening in the woods.
Oh,
okay.
My God.
Straight, no chaser, all tea, no shade.
I mean, looking at this movie, there's really only four locations, I feel like. There's the factory, there's the park for the picnic, there's Babe's house.
Yeah, yeah.
And then, I saved this one for last because it's a good segue, Hernando's Hideaway.
Woohoo!
Where I don't understand what is happening in that song.
That's fair.
Because I'm like, okay, so have you, what, I forget the name of, oh my God. There's this restaurant and there's it's a franchise okay. where it is literally pitch black. There's no lights at all. You were eating blind. Granted, you go in and they ask you if you have any food allergies or anything because they don't want liability and whatnot.
They don't want to kill you.
Right. So like, and I remember when I went, I was like, I don't eat fish. So they gave me something else. And the servers are blind. So I don't know how it works.
Wait,
I don't
they're
know
like,
how.
Wait, hold on. They're actually blind or they're blindfolded?
They're actually blind. And
oh, okay.
And we're in the dark. So we're right. all using our other senses
right.
to eat this food. And so watching this, I was like, oh, cool. You know, this is like some weird sexy club or something where you have to light a match. You light a match to go down a fucking hallway.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. You know, I went to a place like that. I'm like laughing at something about it. I don't know if it's open or not anymore, but it's called the Black Cock, and it's in the East Village. I did a film shoot there where one of my friends had to watch out for me during the film shoot because he was like, you can't sit on anything.
Oh.
Don't sit there. Don't sit on that. Let me get you a towel. And I was like, and what the hell happens down here? And it was in a basement in the East Village. So there you go.
And again, during the song Hernando's Hideaway, I was like, okay, so we're 1950s horny. I get that. Mm-hmm. And you're basically going to a sex club, right?
Yeah, like a prohibition style swingers club.
Right. I don't think that's right, though. Because when we actually see the very well lit Hernando's Hideaway,
yeah,
I'm like, oh, so it's just a club,
exactly. But it's
like secret. I'm waiting for Ricky Ricardo to come out to play Babalu on his bongo or something.
Yeah, I'm sorry, it's not that kind of movie.
I mean, it could have been. Who knows? Like, they could have used that set for another movie.
That is true. That is very true.
They used Hernando's Hideaway for that, and then the very end for the fashion show.
Mm-hmm.
I guess
that's where all the buyers wanted to go.
I don't, but I'm convinced one of them wore her sleep right pajama top earlier in the movie.
Probably.
It was Mabel, the other secretary. The one that's mm-hmm. in the office with Sid, yeah. Who sings I'll Never Be Jealous Again with Vernon. Don't like her.
I know.
I really
funny
don't.
That you purposefully change your voice just to say his name.
Yes. Yes, I'm doing it because I'm funny, God damn it.
You are funny. Praise be. Hallelujah.
Hallelujah. Do you know if the show was like a trunk show or something? Or was the music specifically written for this piece?
That's what's interesting, I think, about this musical. Because the honest to God truth is, I don't know. It's like, it's very much the chicken and the egg kind of thing, which came first. Because a lot of those songs are quite famous. Like Hernando's Hideaway is famous by itself.
Okay.
What's the other one? Hey There. Hey There is also quite famous on its own.
Oh yeah, and I'm not in love at all. But that's not in. Yeah, that's in this one. Okay.
Yes, it is.
I thought that was one of the cut ones.
Nope,
but that's
nope.
That's another one that has its own page
mm-hmm.
on Wikipedia.
Yeah.
And then obviously, like, as we said, Steam Heat. But I was reading for the 2006 Broadway revival, they added in songs
mm-hmm.
that one was originally cut from the 54 production.
Mm-hmm.
One was in the 73 revival, but was renamed in 2006. And then a mm-hmm. third one called The Three of Us, Me, Myself, and I, was originally written for Jimmy Durante. And Vernon sings it. Which, by the way, uh-huh, did you see the 2006 revival? Is that what you're the show that you saw? Or you saw like
No, I think I saw it at like CM or CAP or something growing up.
If you get a chance, look at that cast list. It is like all
stacked,
stars,
isn't it? Yeah, I do remember. I think it's Kelly O'Hara.
Yeah, so she plays Babe. Harry Connick yeah. Jr. made his Broadway debut as mm-hmm. Sid. Yeah. Michael McKean is Vernon.
Okay, but you see, him in that character would be hilarious.
Yes. Yeah. And I feel like they had to have changed some things. Some other things around.
I mean, he's still going to get drunk at the company picnic. But other than that, I mean, yeah, they can change other stuff.
Well, so then, do they have a company picnic in the stage version?
No, I don't okay. remember. So to be fair, I haven't seen the play, like the musical, since, I don't know, probably 2004. So it's been a minute. Much has happened.
Yeah. It's it's just.
But the guys who wrote this musical were big hit makers of the time. So it wouldn't surprise me that if that trunk show feeling is true and real because of who they are and what they were primarily known for doing before, because this is right before. And then, yeah, then Damn Yankees, I think, was their first like original musical, I think. And that's only if I'm remembering correctly.
And what's fascinating, what's fascinating is that Pajama Game happened in 54 and then Damn Yankees happened in 55. And then the same happened with the movies where.
Yeah, they came out back to back.
Yeah. But it turned out that there was some sort of deal made with Jack Warner for the Pajama Game and Damn Yankees.
Because
that was the whole.
It's a package deal.
Yeah, and they were like, okay, we'll have the original cast, but then we'll add somebody for star power, which a lot of these transfers happen. That's mm-hmm. what happened.
Yeah.
That I'm noticing.
mm-hmm. Yeah, no. There's a trend. It's good to note the trend.
So I haven't asked you this question in a while. Mm-hmm. If you were in a production of The Pajama Game, who would you like to play? I could see you as a Gladys. Or May.
Gladys, or either of them would be a lot of fun. In my mind, just now, I'm like, I kind of want to be Vernon.
Vernon.
Well, just hey. To be like, just to be a hateful bastard for like 5 minutes, that could be fun.
He doesn't really get an arc, right? I mean,
no, not okay. really. He has no redeeming qualities. Sounds like Great. Fun to me.
Well,
so
no, that means that
from who I really am, I can really imagine what that feels like.
Because I feel like every once in a while with these classic Hollywood movies that uh-huh. I don't like, I'm like, I'm clearly putting my 21st century self with the product that you're giving me.
Sure.
But with this one, with Vernon, there's clearly nothing there because he comes out hot and he mm-hmm. ends hot.
Yes. Yeah. There isn't a lot of in between. And that's what's wonderful and fun about that.
And that, but like at the end, he starts throwing an endless supply of knives at everyone.
Yes. Isn't that? Listen, hold on a second. Hold on. I'll speak for myself. I've been in some environments, both academic and professional, where if somebody gave me a box of knives and just said, have at it, I don't know if they would be able to stop me.
But I'm laughing at the amount of it because I'm like,
Of course. When he shows up, factory. So there's a knife for each person.
Yeah, but when he shows up to Hernando's hideaway, he only has one knife. Granted, he's also drunk from the bowling alley, question marks?
Yes. Listen, Vernon knows what's up. Vernon knows how to party. So, no, I'd be happy as Mayor Gladys. But, like, if someone were like, Vernon's going to be played by a chick, like, why not? Let's do it.
So, in the end, when they get their raise, but they don't get retroactive pay, would you call it a win? I wouldn't personally, because like, I guess, but like, you know, when May is like, we won't take nothing, I was like, yes, keep going, listen to her. Go for 10 cents, woo. That half, that's that and a half portion of 7.5, I'm like, round it up, figure it out, do something different. Please, my brain doesn't understand this.
And I'm the opposite. I'm like, because it's arbitrary and it's so specific, it's just like, yeah, all right, that makes sense. I think the same thing happened in Newsies when they were all on strike. Weren't they striking for like 3¾ cents or something ridiculous like that too? So. Oh
God, I forgot about Newsies. Still haven't done it yet, everyone. But that I'm sounds sure right.
Somebody and- from one of the Broadway companies or the tour or some like regional theater production would be willing to come on to talk about Newsies. I'm sure there's someone out there who wanted to play what the hell, Jack, whatever the hell. I've never actually seen the movie Newsies. I've never had any interest in seeing the movie Newsies, but whatever.
But Christian Bale's singing, and it's him singing.
That doesn't sound like a selling point. That sounds like I'm at Blockbuster and it's 1997 and somebody says that to me and I put the VHS back.
I know.
It does not get to come home with me. I'm at the public library. It's 1999 checking out my first DVD and I'm like, no, we're not doing this. It wasn't 1999. It was a little later than that, but you get the idea.
Oh, I do want to, there's one more song I want to talk about. And because I actually really liked John Raitt's voice, who played Sid. And when he sang Hey There, first of all, I wrote down, this is a long memo, because he does the full first verse singing into the microphone, be like, it's a memo. But then when he duets with himself, I was like, this is so smart. I don't know if I've ever really seen that before.
I've seen it live. Like what we would do now in performance is put like a voice on loop and then you'd sing over the loop.
Well, yes, that I've seen, but like in a 50s musical, I mean.
That's what I'm saying. Like this is the early iteration of that.
Right. And like clearly he pre-recorded and there is a continuity error where they do change a line in the second verse from the first verse, but who cares? But I really
gotta be a little forgiving every once in a while.
Unless they did it on purpose, then that helps. But sure. I was laughing when he starts like shading himself. He's like, loser, how you idiot.
And yeah, that's real, isn't it? I think that that's one of the most realistic moments in the entire movie. Because I can't think of anybody who hasn't done that to themselves, where you write an email or a text and you can't take it back. And then you call you chastise yourself. Like, I can't tell you how many times in a day on the inside, I would go, way to go, dumbass, to myself. Like, good work, stupid.
I mean, nobody has mentioned it, but in the little show notes for every episode, every once in a while, I do pat myself on the back and be like, that was good. That's funny. And then sometimes I'm like, you're an idiot. Why did you write that? No one's going to read
okay.
it.
That's okay.
But I really did like his voice. I mean, it's a little different than what we've heard before in other movies and things like that. Mm-hmm. He's a high tenor, which I am one too. So I appreciate it.
Yeah, he was a massive, massive star then, massive star of the stage, especially. And his daughter is an incredibly, incredibly gifted musician, world renowned. You might know her. Her name is Bonnie. Same last name.
Okay. I was like, I hope it's who I'm thinking of, because otherwise that'll just be weird. So she won Song of the Year last year.
Yeah. Yeah. So like, musical, massive musical family, I guess is what I'm getting at. So yeah, I have an album that I downloaded from the Middle Country Public Library. And by downloaded, I mean burned, probably illegally. I would say come get me, but the CD's gone. So I mean, it's all files now. It's all digital.
It's somewhere.
Of him singing all the big Broadway hits of the 1940s and 50s. So if you like his voice and you like what he offers as far as song interpretation goes, check him out. It's worth your time.
Well, Lauren, is there anything else you want to talk about before we get into Sharp and Flat?
I feel like I've said this in the past when I've been on these episodes where we're specifically talking about movie. Let's try that again.
Usually I would edit it out, but I'm keeping it just
for
fun. That's fine.
It was beautiful. And I'm sure somebody will think I had a stroke. Probably my mother and nobody else. what I think is so important is that, yes, these movie musicals from this period of time are screwy. They are screwball.
Mm-hmm.
But in cases like this, like, we get to see the beginnings of some people's major careers. The major, I mean, obviously the biggest one of a lot is the trio of Fosse and Abbott and Ross. I believe that those are the two other musical writers. Last names, I don't remember correctly.
Yeah, George Abbott. Richard Adler.
Adler and Ross. You get to see these people who I think like are kind of bedrock, especially institutions, especially of like the more jazz influenced aspects of musical theater that we still hear now. So as much as I know that the plots can be really silly and there are like gaping holes and lots of problems, which we've already discussed, right?
Yeah.
It's really cool to hear some of this music in almost its original format. And get to see these dances in their original format, because, like, you know, there's no recordings out there, really, not a lot of footage of a lot of these old musicals when they were first running. So this is the only way, to a certain extent, some of these performances are preserved.
Right. And like, apparently this was Carol Haney's like last movie that she did. She passed away in 1964.
Yeah. Not too long after.
Yeah, right. She did some TV movies and worked on some other TV shows, but I'm sorry, that was as a choreographer. As an actor, there's a TV movie in 1960 called Summer in New York that happened right after this, and then that's it. But
yeah,
she was one of the assistant dance directors in Singing in the Rain. Good for her. And American in Paris. Great for her.
Yeah, so it's the kind of thing where you get to see these people who are, you know, been dead for anywhere between 20 and 50 years now, maybe even longer. And we get to see them like in their prime. And what was the craft like then? How were people doing this kind of stuff? I don't know. It's always something that's intrigued me. And I think it's something that I like to impart onto my own students who, like, you know, drag their feet when we first start working on musical theater written before 1975, some even night before 1980. They're like, oh my gosh, don't make me do it. And I'm very much like, I understand. I do. I said, but you have to understand, you on the other side of the coin need to understand how we got to the way musical theater and movie musicals sound now. Right. You have to be able to understand the history, because the musicals that are written later have a lot of these ideas baked into them automatically because the people who wrote them did their homework. So you also have to do your homework. Thank you for coming to this TED Talk.
I wrote I've been keeping track of the movies I watched this year on Letterboxd.
Mm-hmm. Nice.
And I gave this a 3 out of 5 just because I was like, it's fine. There's nothing really super terrible about it. Like,
yeah.
in the grand scheme of things, it's just middle of the road. I just feel like also there might be too much going on.
A lot of characters and not a lot of content is really kind of what you're saying.
Yeah, because the movie is only an hour and 40 minutes. Like, it's a clip. So
you're in and out. It's beautiful.
So, like, those songs that they cut, and what's interesting about this one is that every scene, almost every scene has a song. So that's really, I mean, like, that's like golden age style of musicals. But like, I think we needed a rest time or like a few scenes here and there, because it just felt fast and not enough.
Yeah. And then you and I experienced the pendulum swinging the opposite direction when we watched 1776. And, you know, there was 45 minutes where it was only dialogue,
which I loved. But that's another but you should listen to that episode. And we should get into Sharp and Flat. Let's do it.
Yay.
Sharp Flat.
So in this section of the show, we're going to highlight some moments, whether or not we talked about it. If we liked it, it's sharp. And if we didn't like it or thought it could change, it's flat. Mm-hmm. I surprisingly have few flats for this.
No, we'll go for it, John.
Let's rip them off. I'm going to first flat, and it should come to no surprise to everyone, Vernon and Sid. Both of them are just terrible, terrible people. I mean, Sid has some redeeming qualities about him, but not really. I also flatted Hoopsie's singing voice, and that is the character's name. She's like the ditzy blonde one. She talks like Adelaide from Guys and Dolls, and I'm like, oh, guys, did we need this? I get it, it's of the time, but... And then my last flat is for not knowing how much time has passed, because it seems like this could take place in the course of a week, but I feel like months and maybe a year has passed. A few months definitely has passed, but it moves at such a clip that I'm like, where are we? You just get hired and now you're in love with her, but blah, I don't know. But Lauren, what are your flats?
Well, I would say sexual harassment in the workplace is my biggest flat. Yes. I think it's my biggest flat.
When he's like, go on a date with me, I'm like, where did this come from?
Yeah. It's a lot, and it happens very quickly. And you know, and I suppose love at first sight is love or lust at first sight. Is a very real thing. And then we end up with, you know, situations like this where it's, you know, it is a massive conflict of interest for Babe, our leading lady, to start, you know, shtupping him or doing anything like that, you know. And for those of you who don't know what shtup means, I would tell you to look it up. Like,
figure it out.
I'm from, this is what happens when you're from New York. They're just like, we throw in words from other languages because we grew up with people who spoke other languages.
With learning.
Just like what you did. That's just what you did. That is, I guess, that is my largest flat. I guess it should be longer. We talked about the ending. I agree. It's abrupt. I think the ending of the movie just needs a floof.
Like honestly, if they added in a, like, what, another 5 minutes?
Yeah. We're not asking for much.
I mean, hell, they could have, I feel like they could have just done the show, because it feels like that's what they did. Although they've changed some things here around, but I feel like they could, this is one of those musicals where I'm like, you can just do it. You don't have to justify, you know, you don't really have to justify anything.
Yeah.
Really.
Yeah.
It's not like, it's not like Wicked or like Into the Woods or some fantastical thing where you have to like really set the world. This is a factory, a clothing factory in the 50s.
Yeah. It's all very real.
Yes.
You know.
All right. Let's get into sharps. Yeah. So for my sharps, most of the choreography, there's some of them that I'm just like, like the ending of Once a Year Day. That when they're rolling around in the mud and getting everything dirty, I was like, what are you doing? It's chaos. I don't like it. I also sharped. Okay. Within the factory workers, there's this one woman with a pink frilly apron. I'm obsessed with her. I don't know. She had one line, I think, in the whole movie. Mm-hmm. Not really a character name. Obsessed. I also sharped May and Gladys.
Mm-hmm.
I really did like those characters. I also sharped Sid's commentary on Hey There, as we talked about.
Yeah, yeah.
And then I'm sharping the following performances. Racing the Clock reprise, where they go super slow. I was like, yes! And like, you can hear all the harmonies and everything. Mm-hmm. I was like, ah, this is great. Because the one earlier is faster, more up-tempo and everything. And I'm like, I can't.
Well, yeah, it's more like a race.
It's chaotic. And then also, I also really loved in that one, they have this weird steamer-like thing that they put the shirts on that the arms like flail out, like the inflatable waving arm people.
Yes, yes,
that
yes.
You see at car dealerships. But even in the reprise, it goes up slowly. I was like, fuck yeah, everyone. And then the other performance I'm going to sharp is Steam Heat because.
Hello.
Lauren, what are your sharps?
Oh, I love this score. It is such a fun, bouncy score. I feel like not a lot of things get written like this anymore, and maybe there's probably a reason for it. I mean, I think I know the reason for it, truthfully, but I just get such, it's one of those things where I could play it on a stereo and I would just enjoy that. You know, with either the Broadway cast or the movie cast, frankly, because it's a lot of the same people, right? And it's just, no, but it really is such a joy, and it's joyful. Silly, yes, but it brings up a lot of, like I said earlier, it also brings up a lot of really important points, and especially because, like, you know, we're recording this in the middle of Women's History Month. And International Women's Day was just like a couple of days ago. And it highlights how women are treated in the factory, especially if they're trying to get into positions of power or they have half an ounce of power. And then the way the men treat them when they have that. And yes. How do they, you know, especially the situation like we see with Bay, where she now is like, okay, I have all these feelings, but he's my boss. And that conflict. I think that a lot of that rings true because oftentimes people do meet and fall in love with people that they work with. I've had a showmance. I've had several showmances. So I think this is true. And sometimes it's a problem. So I think that there are a lot of it that for being a silly and like kind of screwy movie. It had a lot of things that because it's set in a real place in a real time that I think a lot of individuals might be able to relate to. So I would like to sharp its relatability to then and to now.
What's also really fascinating, and if you're going to watch it again, pay attention to this time, is that there's a moment in Sid's office where you see a calendar on the wall, but you don't see a year. And that's because they wanted it to not be a period.
They wanted it to be timeless.
They wanted it to be timeless. I mean, granted, now, like, 60,
they aren't
70
making clothes
years later,
that way now.
Well, no, I mean, almost 70 years later, looking at what they're wearing, you know, it's a period piece for us watching it in the 21st century. But like,
sure,
it is very of the time. And then like, you can figure out what year it's supposed to be in 1956. But
when you add, my dad was born.
Aw. Yes. Would you add any of the songs to your life's playlist?
I love Hey There, and I was certain that's one of those songs that I love it. I like his version, and also a very dear friend of mine sang it in concert a long time ago, and her rendition of it is stunning. So it's one of those songs that, you know, it's just, again, it gives me warm, good, fuzzy feelings.
I'm going to agree with you on Hey There, both versions, but I'm also going to throw in Steam Heat just because.
We understand. You like the song. And, you know, especially because we live in New York City, like, you know that sound.
Well, so before seeing the movie, I was like, I didn't know what this movie was about, clearly. Yeah. And I was like, how does this song fit into whatever this movie is about? I didn't realize they were making pajamas. And yeah. It's all about unionizing and or not unionizing. It's about them wanting a raise for their union. So
yeah, and Steam Heat, I mean, it is still, to a certain extent, it's still a love song. Because the chorus is, I got steam heat, but I need your love to keep away the cold.
Which, again, I was listening to and I was like, how does this fit into this story?
Well, I mean, it's a love story, so it does sort of fit in.
But like...
And it's exhibitionist, so I don't know.
Yeah, well, Lauren, on that note...
Whatever, I'm happy that it's in there, okay?
It's in there. We love it. And I clearly love it.
Yes.
But Lauren, on that note, we're done with the episode.
Yes. Ooh, I think we did this in record time today, too, which is great.
We did it in record time. You're welcome, everyone. Lauren, what do you have to plug or promote?
That's a great question. There is, right now I'm in a resting period. Things have been kind of crazy and now I'm kind of like enjoying the calm. So I don't have anything currently to plug or promote, but if you want to follow me, you can do that at LAGIZZ_SANGS. Like that. Oh, and I guess if you want to study with me, I think I have like two openings left in the studio because things are a little bonkers for me. I'm teaching a lot right now.
Well, what about your, do you have your summer lined up with classes or?
Oh yeah, I guess it's worth mentioning. Yeah. I guess you can catch me at the Second City in Brooklyn. We are just starting to kind of like get the New York teams up and running now that the theater is open. So I would say definitely come check us out at the Second City in Williamsburg. It's a lot of fun.
And if you know how much time passes in this movie, I'd love to hear about it.
I was a construct. We have to let it go.
Days. How many days pass? That's not a construct.
How many That's times does the sun come up?
How many times does the sun come up and down? You can email me at buttersongpod@gmail.com. I'm also on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and TikTok at buttersongpod. Listen, if you could justify why these songs are in this movie and show, please do. If you've been in a recent production of The Pajama Game, let me know about it. It's really kind of sad that in the movie, the titular song is so short. I thought it was like a longer piece with like a little dance break or something, but not really. Mm-hmm. So, and if you want to be part of the next episode's conversation, well, we're going to be talking about Waitress. Yeah. I don't know why I did those noises.
Like the original movie or the Broadway show?
The Broadway pro shot.
Theater.
The Broadway pro
shot. Thank you. I'm over here thinking like, Kerry Russell didn't sing in that movie.
No.
I get it.
No.
I'm obviously not a fan.
And that's okay. But Lauren, actually, I'm a fan of you.
You're making me blush. I'm a fan of you too, babe.
Yay. And thank you everyone for listening and bye for now.
Ciao.
Special thanks to Aaron Troy for creating the pod's artwork and to Nick Bombacino for composing the theme song and the jingles. A huge thank you to CastBox for hosting this podcast. And thank you again for tuning in to today's episode of Life's But a Song. Bye for now, everyone, and have a musical day.